to take the survey and report in the results. And again, they were, these are, you know, conservative, politically conservative military background individuals for the most part. And yet again, their receptivity to this was, as I recall, in the goodly 80 percentile favorable range. So again, even in quarters of our population where you might not expect a very favorable reception to this idea, the survey results were quite strongly favorable. So I reported this back to the counselors, too. A while later, I was in my dialogue saying that, you know, we really need to get some help from you guys with the environmental crisis. Our planet's in environmental meltdown. And also, it'd be nice if we had some scientists who, star visitor helpers who could come here and operate in a consistent, ongoing way.
Now, how did you do the communication? Was it telepathy?
Telepathic, yeah.
Okay.
That's the gold standard of communication across the cosmos. Some of these races can talk orally, but most deal with telepathy, and even the ones that communicate orally are also telepathic.
Okay.
So I put that out there, and a little while later, some weeks, a month or so, counselor came back and said, okay, we've talked about it among our council, and we decided we're going to send a delegation to Earth, 12 top environmental scientists from one of our planets have volunteered to come as a contingent to Earth.
What planet, Richard?
The planet is called Altamar. It orbits a red dwarf star in the cluster of red dwarfs in the general neighborhood of Barnard Star, so that would put it somewhere in the 6 to 7 light year out from us range. And these top scientists, they said they'd be the equivalent of PhDs in our culture, in various environmental specialties, formed up a team and decided to come to Earth and help us out with the environmental crisis we find ourselves in here. Let's take this chronologically, I guess. So,
you're saying, are they here now?
They are here now.
Right.
About their technology allows them to travel 6 or 7 light years in about 5 weeks. So obviously, although they don't travel in a linear fashion, you could say their travel speed is above the speed of light.
Absolutely. Okay, so, they must be bending space-time somehow.
Yeah, you got it. You got it, you know. So that process commenced towards the end of last year, and they arrived at the latter part of January of this year.
Where did they arrive at?
Shall we say that's classified? I'm not being cute here, but the cabal, the global ruling elite, that ultra-rich ruling elite that would like to run the world, don't like competition. And
so we're basically
these guys up in a heartbeat if they knew where they were, and either take them into captivity or annihilate them.
All right. So
I don't
want that
to happen to them. So the most I'll narrow it down to is North America. And as you know, North America extends from the Guatemala border of Mexico up to Nunavut territory in Canada near the Arctic Circle. So that's as close as I'll narrow it.
All right.
Somewhere in there, their craft landed and has a home base. But they have dispersed out from it and are doing environmental surveys around the world. So it's not like they're all hunkered down inside the craft. They're out and about doing field work and gathering information so that they can do remedial work, that operating on the best of information.
What do they look like, Richard?
They look fairly human. If a person wanted to go to my website under the Star Visitor section. The second entry there is drawings and photos of various kinds of star visitors, and they would find a picture of an Altamirian hybrid. I say hybrid because while these scientists are Altamirians, they are the result of some gene work done to incorporate a little bit of human genes into their makeup so they can handle our gravity and our atmosphere without having to have clunky equipment on all the time. They're mostly, you know, predominantly Altamirian with a smidgen of enough human genes for that purpose. But they have larger than human heads proportionally, but they're smaller people than some of us. Their height tends to run in the 5 foot range, not 5 foot zero, but, you know, 5 foot some inches.
Are they frail?
I wouldn't describe them as frail, no. They have very large almond-shaped eyes that are slanted up, sort of like the Zetas, only they don't, it's not all black. They have a pupil with an iris, but it's much larger than our pupil and iris on a larger eye structure than ours, proportional to the head. And then the whole head is larger, proportional to the body than ours is. But other than that, you would say they'd be sort of like a ultra-large-headed human.
But if they were walking down the street, would you do a double take?
Oh,
you would. Okay.
The nose is very minimalist, sort of like a, not quite like a Zeta, but close to that. There's not much sticking out from the head of the nose structure, more a slight little protrusion with nasal holes, and that's it. The lips are pretty much, a slit line. There's no Angelina Jolie kind of fullness to the lips at all. Very minimalist. There are ears, but they would never be confused with George Bush's ears. They stick pretty close to the head there. And they're moderate size. You'd say that's one hell of a genetically deformed individual an extraterrestrial.
Okay.
And the second guess would be the right one.
Right, exactly. But you would question it. You'd say that person looks kind of different, kind of strange.
But I'll tell you what, if they put on sunglasses and a wig and maybe a scarf around their throat, they could probably pass for, in most cities, not get a double look.
Okay.
You know, and they're not that far off.
And are they doing that? Are they in disguise?
These aren't. These are hardworking scientists. They don't mess around like that. But
I'll tell you,
tall whites that are here do that. In fact, as Charles Hall has indicated,
they do
disguise up and go down to the Vegas casinos and see how the locals play and lose their money. They're not the only race that does that. There are several humanoid races visiting us who can pull that off. In fact, your tax dollars are at work at an underground installation well north of Area 51.
Well, this brings back a new meaning to the saying, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yes. There's an underground installation that is basically a reception center for visiting star visitors conducted by your government with military officers and technical folks there who help them develop whatever clothing and disguises they need to get the experience of immersing in our society and walking around and seeing it right at sidewalk level.
Let me ask you, going home. Richard, why are you making this announcement when it was supposed to be secret, at least from the elitists, or let's call them the Illuminati? I mean, why are we tipping them off that these 12 environmental scientists have come here?
Well, this is a gift from Star Nations to the people of Earth. These people took their lives in their hands to come here. The cabal or Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, the shadow government, were gunning for them, had their own military anti-gravity craft up looking for them as they came in. these guys came here because they treasure Earth and would like to help out and hope that the experience might lead to further learning and maybe some benefit to their culture from what they learn here. I'm announcing it because there's no point keeping it secret. The only once they got here, we kept it kind of under wraps until they got here, because if the Cabal knew their arrival time, date, and place, they would have been more effective in setting up their fully armed welcoming committee. But once they're here and dispersed, there's no more security issues. We can afford to announce the fact, even joyfully announce it, because this is a gift to the people of Earth. These people have much more advanced knowledge and equipment than we do for turning around environmental damage. They hope eventually, if we can get these bad boys out of the way, the Illuminati as you call them, that they can come out more in the open and mingle with our scientists and teach them a thing or two and do some joint project work so our people pick up these advanced techniques and we can turn around the healing of the Earth's environments much more quickly than we could on our, just stuck on our own devices.
Richard, how long will this group stay here?
They are here for the duration. They don't put it in quite in quantitative terms, but they expect that the problem is so bad that it's going to take an indefinite period of time. They're not drumming their fingers and waiting to go home. They may live out their lives here working on this, because there are several factors that make it very hard to put a deadline on the remedial correction. Well, for one thing, they expect us to pitch in and work on turning our environment back to its pristine state. Two, they can't be healing and we're shoveling dirt as fast as they're healing. You know, it isn't going to get anywhere. There needs to be you see the efforts going in now, but there needs to be a culture change in our society about taking environmental sensitivity and care seriously, you know, a responsible stewardship of the Earth environment rather than using it as a waste bin for our goods.
Richard, have you met with them at all?
Yes and no. I'll tell you a little more about that. I was at the landing to receive them with a couple other colleagues. They had to come in cloaked. And so I saw the energy of their ship, but I didn't see the hard outline of the metal shell because they were in cloaked mode. But it was, there was no mistaking the energy field, lighted energy field coming down. And when it came to their presence, there was some telepathic communication that went on. They detected some Cabal scout craft, anti-gravity armed craft crawling around, and they had to move a little bit and stay in cloak mode. And so we were not able to, you know, get out in the open on a totally visible face-to-face handshake basis. So that part had to abort. But you know, we were there physically, and there was some telepathic communication.
Well, this is an incredible story, Richard. How many humans are now aware of this visitation?
Well, those on my email list or who've read my website are, as you know, the media in this country is rather highly controlled. Your program's one of the outstanding exceptions, but generally this stuff does not play in the New York Times or the CBS 6 o'clock news, and so it's not gotten out to the general world. But certainly there are those in government who know, and certainly the military intelligence communities, citizens who make it their business to follow this stuff closely. The word of mouth around the Internet has gotten to an awful lot of people, thousands and thousands. But the billions of people, the 6 billion people on this Earth in general, are not informed of this as yet.
Reminds me a little bit of the Project Serpo, where we sent astronauts to another planet in an exchange program. Would this be anything to do with that?
Well, I don't accept the reality of Project Serpo, I can't really operate from that question.
So this is different?
This is different, quite different.
All right, stay with us, Richard. I want to talk with you more about this. We'll also open up the phone lines. What an incredible story. I'll be back. Well, we might have crashed Dr. Richard Boylan's website for a little bit, but I'm sure it'll come right back up. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Richard Boylan. Richard, this is an incredible story. How many people believe it when you talk to them about it?
I talk to people familiar with the UFO field and my work, and they take it in stride. I mean, the Altamirans are not the first people to come to Earth by any means, and this is another layer of the ongoing interaction between star nations and the people of Earth, and I'm sure it's not the last layer of interaction, but it's another step forward as we move beyond touch and go to a more stable kind of living together and working together. I'd like to introduce the 12 people of this team to our listeners real briefly so that they get a sense of what each of these people are doing here, if I may.
Yeah, they're not with you now, are they?
No.
Okay.
Chris and Oman are technology specialists. Their specialty area is working reversing the damage that our technologies are doing to the environment, and that includes some of the electromagnetic fields and some of the advanced exotic technology that the Cabal or Illuminati are using that people aren't aware of but is damaging the Earth, for example. They have an underwater craft that uses highly advanced technology that went kaplooey in the North Sea and has caused a great environmental damage field there that is going to need some attention. There are three botanical specialists. Fred, number one, as we call him, because another guy liked the Fred name so much he wanted it too, so we have to call him Fred 1, Fred 2. But Fred 1 works above with the above water green vegetation. Alvin and Luke work with the vegetation underwater, one in the freshwater environments, one in the seawater environments. There's a woman who's a energy specialist, Mata, who uses healing energies and closest analogy to her work in human culture terms might be psychotherapeutics or Reiki or other kinds of psychic energy healing work. There are four environmental specialists. Fred, number two, likes to work with the environment of fire. So that would involve things like the magma and lava. Sam works with the fresh and saline water environment. Alfred specializes in the atmosphere. And Tom works with the earth crust. And Amanda is their communications specialist, what we might call their public information officer.
They brought a PR person?
Well, not so much PR, but communications. She's the one my team tends to communicate with the most because that's her specialty. She's not tied up in the environmental work as much as communicating back and forth and carrying messages from us to them and them to us, so they're all on the same page. And the overall administrator is Gene, Commander Gene, as I call him, because he has a kind of forceful military bearing. He's a no-nonsense, but, you know, he sees everything gets done and is done in good order, as a good administrator will do.
So what are they?
That's the 12.
What do they wear, Richard? What kind of uniforms or outfits?
They in their own culture, they sometimes don't even bother with clothes. Around here, they've been seen wearing robes, loose-fitting robes. They're used to a planet where the sun is dimmer, and they find our environment pretty bright. So they generally prefer to work either in twilight or the dark, or in shady environments like forest canopies, you know, where there's shade. They prefer a warmish climate, but can make do with a cold climate, you know, if their environmental work takes them up into the northern latitudes or the extreme southern latitudes. It might be in those environments they would have a little bit sturdier clothing, but mostly they seem to prefer the looser-fitting robe kind of basic clothing.
And what kind of equipment did they bring, Richard?
Well, extremely advanced. I have not seen it. Their whole operation is cloaked, and I'm not sure I'd know what I was seeing if I did see it. But it makes our stuff look pale by comparison. And more to the point, they have a technology that doesn't use destructive levels of electromagnetic fields, or it certainly doesn't put out any pollution. There's no electrical or gas engine kind of thing. So it's quite neat, and I think we are lucky to have people with such advanced abilities helping us out with our project of trying to turn around the environmental destruction on Earth.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's go to our wild card line. Andy in L.A., you're on with us. Hi there, Andy.
Hi, George. You have a great show, as usual.
Thank you.
And you're getting better as time goes on, by the way, George. My question to you is for your guest. Number one, is there any time frame as far as how much time we have left before we reach that point of no return where it will be a lost cause? And number two, you know, without being judgmental, how do you know for a fact that these individuals have the positive intent for our planet, as opposed to using that as a cover story for a bigger intent, possibly like to habitate our Earth someday and placing their own hybrids or whatever in place of us in the future? And thank
almost,
you.
You're welcome, man. Almost like the to serve man routine in the Twilight Zone. So a twofold question, Richard. First of all, how much time do we have, really?
Well, our scientists at the Rio de Janeiro conference, which was almost a decade ago, said that they were seeing the breakdown of environmental systems at such an alarming rate that they thought that if we didn't straighten up and fly right, you know, and start to seriously change our ways, that we would reach the point of no return by 2025. The presence of the Altamirans here may affect that equation a little bit, but I guess I'm really hesitant to say that because I don't want to say anything that would give people an excuse to say, oh, well, I'll just keep throwing, you know, garbage into the river and throw my trash out the window of the car, you know, and screw the planet, let them clean it up. We'll never get anywhere with that kind of an approach.
What will they recommend, or will they get tough here with us? I mean, if you know, I'm a believer that global warming was going to happen anyway, Richard. It's a cycle, but I do think man speeds things on a little bit. I mean, will they get to a point where they say, you folks are polluting? I mean, there's no question we're polluting. Will they do something to stop us?
No. They're not here to take over our society and tell us which way is north, you know. They understand we're an intelligent species. We have the capacity to know what's right. In fact, many people in our own cultures lecture us a lot harder than they would ever hope to lecture us. You know, if we listen to our own more progressive scientists, we have all the lecture we need. It's up to us to make a good faith effort to take the environmental crisis seriously and roll up our sleeves and do something about it. They certainly come out of their way at great expense and risk and really the ending of their life as they knew it on their own planet to come here and come to a foreign place and hunker down and help pitch in with us on environmental remediation. It's going to take all of the effort of all of us Altamirans and humans to turn this thing around, and we absolutely do need to do that. As for the listener's second question about whether this is
a
Trojan horse operation to lull us while they prepare for invasion, that's not the case. Star Nations doesn't allow that kind of behavior. The Federation of Intelligent Civilizations of the Galaxy, and which is also organizing various races' contacts with Earth and making sure that things operate at a level that we can handle in our without having a mental meltdown. So that's not in the cards. The Altamirans are here as a generous, self-sacrificing gift to the people of Earth. Star Nations has told me, by the by, though, that from time to time they hope we would, as we get ourselves more advanced in our civilization and clean up our planet, reach a level of maturity in terms of our communication and relations with the various star races that are in contact with us, where we would become receptive if, say, a race on a dying star needed to find another place to live and wanted to come here. This might be on the order of, say, 3 million people, which is about the population of Lithuania. In other words, a reasonably very small drop in the bucket on the 6 billion people of Earth and our large landmass, some of which is not even inhabited currently.
True.
So, down the road, if we're looking decades out, and as we grow up as a people and not only come to peace with a UFO reality, but resume our own space program and get out to Mars and so forth, and everybody kind of wakes up and says, we're a cosmic society. Our boundaries are not the edge of Earth's horizon, but we're just one of many inhabited planets on many civilizations in the cosmos. That once we, as a people of Earth, get that perspective going and stop treating it as Buck Rogers woo-woo stuff, they hope we will reach a level of maturity in our culture and society where we will say, if among the various situations out there, there's a civilization that's on a dying star and needs a place to hunker down and find a new place to live, that we might put out the welcome mat for such a civilization. And, of course, these civilizations don't come in with a begging bowl in hand. They have advanced technology and highly developed spiritual, metaphysical, and knowledge stores they bring with them. They would hardly come empty-handed. But I would hope humanity as a society would reach that level of maturity in the decades ahead to where, if that situation were presented to us, we would step up to the plate in a hospitable way and make room for that to take place.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, please. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Calgary, Alberta.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mr. Norrie, as usual, you don't do anything by halves. This is an extraordinary topic. And Dr. Boylan, this is astounding news. I've just finished reading Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, in which, of course, the topic is about awareness and consciousness and evolving. And, wow, I